Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalms chapter 55, which I will entitle, Cast Your Burden on the Lord. The heading to this psalm is this, For the Director of Music with Stringed Instruments, a Maskil of David. A Maskil is probably some sort of musical term which the scholars have lost knowledge of, but the psalm identifies itself, or at least the heading of the psalm identifies the psalm as being of David, which means he probably wrote it. And as we go through here, we're probably going to decide that the psalm was written on the occasion of Absalom's rebellion, although that cannot be proved mathematically. We start now in verses 1 and go through 8 of Psalms 55. David says this, God, he's praying to God, God, listen to my prayer and do not ignore my plea for help. Pay attention to me and answer me. I am restless and in turmoil with my complaint. Because of the enemy's voice, because of the pressure of the wicked. For they bring down disaster on me and harass me in anger. My heart shudders within me. Terrors of death sweep over me. Fear and trembling grip me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, if only I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and find rest. How far away I would flee. I would stay in the wilderness. Selah. I would hurry to my shelter from the raging wind and the storm. So David basically is saying here, he's got a complaint. He's complaining to God. Here's what John Gill says about complaints to God. Quote, saints have their complaints on account of their sins and corruptions, their barrenness and unfruitfulness, and the decay of vital religion in them, and because of the low estate of Zion, Zion being the church, the declining state of the interest of Christ, and the little success of his gospel, and they mourn in these complaints over their own sins and the sins of others, professors and profane, and under afflictions temporal and spiritual, both their own and the church's. Well, I don't know who best expresses my feelings as I sit here in the United States of Sodom and Gomorrah. Who expresses my internal state better, David in Psalms 55, 1 through 8, or Gill in his commentary thereon? Well, if this is occasioned by Absalom's rebellion, then David really did have reason to have fear and trembling over him and horror overwhelming him. And he had reason to be restless and in turmoil because that rebellion was horrible. He came very close to losing not only his kingdom, but his life. The story of Absalom and his rebellion is found in 2 Samuel 15 through 17, and it's a sad story. Verse 5, David says, fear and trembling grip him. Adam Clark says concerning this, he, David, is in distress. He mourns, makes a noise, sobs and sighs. His heart is wounded. He expects nothing but death. This produces fear. This produces tremor, which terminates in that deep apprehension of approaching an inevitable ruin that overwhelms him with horror. No man ever described a wounded heart like David. These old 18th and 19th century commentators do a pretty good job of it, too, of describing approaching doom. David says in verse 6, if only I had wings like a dove. Why a dove? Why that particular bird? Well, a dove is harmless, innocent, and trembling. And of course, David would like to be associated with somebody who is harmless, and he is innocent, and he is trembling. And also, as Adam Clark points out, a dove flies swiftly, very fast, and so David wanted to get out of there, fly away, and find rest. If this is Absalom's rebellion, remember David fled across the Jordan and ended up at first on the Mount of Olives, and then he went down to, I think it was Mahanaim in the valley, in the Jordan Valley on the east side of the Jordan. So actually he did fly away and find rest, but he was still in trouble even though he was on the other side of the Jordan outside of Jerusalem, because Absalom, all he had to do was cross the Jordan and attack David, and in his discombobulated state, David would have been defeated. Absalom, fortunately for David, chose not to do that, but if he had, David would be toast. Now, David's reference in verse 6 to the dove flying away and finding rest, I would fly away and find rest if I had wings like a dove. That fleeing there is used by some as evidence that David is talking about Absalom's rebellion. For example, in 2 Samuel 15:14, we read this, David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for otherwise none of us will escape from Absalom. Well, I think that's a slender reed to support that argument, but I think that if we look at the rest of the psalm and also all of the psalm in its totality, it's probably, in my humble opinion, referring to the time that David had to flee from Absalom, and so we're going to take it that way. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that this is not certain, that this psalm also could refer to times that David was being chased by Saul before David took over the kingship, or Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown further say that maybe that neither event was exclusively before David's mind. He might have just been talking about rebellion in general against him, or maybe not rebellion, but fights that he had to fight. He had to fight a lot of them, as you know the story of David. But as I said, the rest of the psalm makes it sound very much like Absalom's rebellion. We go now to Psalms 59, verses 9 through 14. David continues praying, "Lord, confuse and confound their speech. For I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night they make the rounds on its walls." Violence and strife make the rounds on the city's walls, and that city's probably Jerusalem. "Crime and trouble are within it. Destruction is inside it. Oppression and deceit never leave its marketplace. Now it is not an enemy who insults me, otherwise I could bear it. It is not a foe who rises up against me, otherwise I could hide from him. But it is you, a man who is my peer." Now notice David switches here from speaking to the Lord. Now he's speaking to his treacherous friend, former friend. "But it is you, a man who is my peer, my companion and good friend. We used to have close fellowship. We walked with the crowd into the house of God." David says in verse 9, he prays to the Lord, "Confuse and confound their speech." The NASB has "divide their tongues." The NIV has "confound their speech," as does the Holman Christian Study Bible. Well, what does David mean by that? Well, he means let his enemies, and we assume that's Absalom, let Absalom's counselors give opposite advice, and that's exactly what happened. This happened when Absalom's advisors fought over how to deal with David. David had actually prayed that the counsel of Absalom's counselor, Ahithophel, would be foolishness. We read that in 2 Samuel 15:31. "Now someone told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness." Now Ahithophel was a very wise counselor. The people listened to him as if his words were the words of God. And David says, "No, not this time. Let Ahithophel give Absalom some foolish advice." That's exactly what happened. Now let's look and see how Ahithophel and Hushai gave contradictory advice to Absalom. David had just fled across the Jordan River, heading out of Jerusalem when he realized he had lost control of the city. Absalom asked Ahithophel what he should do. Hushai had been planted by David as a spy, as a mole in Absalom's government. And so the two advisors, Ahithophel and Hushai, are going to give contradictory advice to Absalom. Ahithophel said, "Attack tonight before David has a time to recover." That advice was very wise. If Absalom had done that, David would have been toast. Hushai, on the other hand, said, "No, no, don't do that. Take the time to gather an army from Dan to Beersheba, because David's army is great and mighty and powerful, and he'll beat you." Well, by the time it took Absalom to gather an army from Dan to Beersheba, David had a time to organize himself and get his troops ready and to recover. So Hushai gave bad advice. Ahithophel gave good advice. The advice contradicted, and David's prayer in Psalm 55:9 was answered when David had prayed, "Lord, confuse and confound their speech." That's exactly what happened to Ahithophel. And this is one more piece of evidence that this psalm is referring to Absalom's rebellion. And incidentally, when Ahithophel found out that Absalom was not going to listen to his advice, he realized that Absalom was finished and that he therefore was going to be finished as a traitor and would be executed. And so Ahithophel just anticipated his death a little ways and hung himself. David says he sees violence and strife in the city. And as I said, that city is Jerusalem. There was violence and strife in there because there was a civil war, an insurrection going on. Day and night, they make the rounds on its walls. That would be violence and strife. So what this is a poetic way of saying, remember, this is a song, which tends to be poetic. In the city, there's violence and strife, and on the walls, there's violence and strife. In other words, everywhere. Inside and outside, inside and around. Crime and trouble within the city, destruction, oppression, and deceit. That sounds like Jerusalem when Absalom took over. Violence is in the city. That could refer, perhaps, to Absalom's rape of David's concubines on David's housetop, on the housetop of the palace. We read that in 2 Samuel 16, verse 22. So they, that's the rebels, pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and he slept with his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Of course, sleeping with a concubine is an act of insurrection and rebellion and treachery. He wasn't doing it for the sex. He was doing it for the power. That was violence. And of course, the whole city saw it, and David would hear about it immediately. He had spies in Jerusalem. No wonder he was upset. Now, he's not only upset with the crime and violence in Jerusalem, but in verse 13, he is upset with a man who is his peer, his companion, his good friend, who rose up against him. Well, who would that be? That sounds an awful lot like Ahithophel, as I've just pointed out. Ahithophel used to be David's good counselor before he defected and went over to Absalom. Now, in verse 13, when David says that this foe of his is his peer, that doesn't mean that Ahithophel was equal in authority to David. No one was equal to David, the king, in authority. Rather, David esteemed the companion as much as he esteemed himself. Ahithophel was David's peer in David's estimation. David looked at himself and looked at Ahithophel and didn't see any difference, in other words. So that makes the treachery even worse, to get betrayed by your friends, kind of like when Jesus got betrayed by Judas Iscariot. We go now to Psalms 55, verses 15 through 19. David says, "Let death come deceitfully upon them," meaning his enemies. "Let them go down alive to Sheol, for evil is in their dwelling in their midst. As for me, I shall call upon God, and the Lord will save me. Evening and morning and at noon I will complain and murmur, and he will hear my voice. He will redeem my soul in peace from the battle which is against me. For they are many who strive with me. God will hear and answer them, even the one who sits enthroned from of old, Selah, with whom there is no change, and who do not fear God." Verse 15, "Let death come deceitfully upon him." That is an imprecation. One more example of imprecatory psalms. And as I answer that very easily and repeatedly as we go through the psalms, nothing wrong with praying for justice to come upon the enemies of God or the enemies of your kingdom. Nothing wrong with that at all. David, remember, was more than just a private individual. He was a king, and if this is referring to Absalom's rebellion, well, that makes it even more obvious that this is not personal revenge, but justice. "Let death come deceitfully upon them." That's his own son, by the way. And I don't think he meant for death to come down on Absalom, because he told Joab to spare Absalom, when Joab, David's general, went across the Jordan to chase Absalom down. But he meant his enemies in general. He wanted them to die. He wanted them to go down alive to Sheol. What does it mean to go down alive to death? Sheol is the grave or death. How do you go down alive? Gill and Clark suggests that David wanted his enemies to be buried alive. Perhaps, but I think more probably, that David meant that he wanted his enemies to die early in an unnatural death. As the NIV Study Bible suggests, that actually happened in Absalom's rebellion. Absalom himself died when his hair got hung up in a tree and David's general Joab stabbed him to death. And we've already mentioned that Ahithophel, when his advice to Absalom was not taken, Ahithophel hung himself. And further buttressing the claim that this imprecation, this request that David's enemies go down alive to Sheol is referring to an unnatural early death. In verse 23 of this very psalm, Psalm 55, we read this: "God, you will bring them down to the pit of destruction. Men of bloodshed and treachery will not live out half their days." In other words, they die prematurely. I think that's what David is saying here. "Why? For evil is in their dwelling in their midst." In other words, they are up to their eyeballs in evil. Verse 16, "As for me, I shall call upon God, and the Lord will save me." David often says that. God is his deliverer. Verse 17, "Evening and morning and at noon I will complain and murmur, and he will hear my voice." Notice that his prayer is complaining and murmuring. He doesn't seem too ashamed about that. I just saw a YouTube video, young Christian woman saying, "If you're upset, let God hear it. It doesn't bother him. Complain about how bad everything is." Job complained. He complained probably a little too much, but he did complain. You know, sometimes you got to get it off your chest when things are going real bad, and things were going real bad for David. Now, I will admit here that just because David is complaining and murmuring doesn't make it right. He could have been wrong to do that. But I think God is gracious enough to listen to our complaints. But I think that's only true in extreme circumstances. Generally, it's best to not complain. It's best not to murmur. It's just best to petition the Lord. Now, David is praying evening and morning at noon, 3 times a day. Why start out in the evening and then the next morning and then at noon? Well, that's because the Jewish day began with prayer in the evening. Well, actually, the clock, the calendar started in the evening. The calendar rolled over from the 5th of the month to the 6th of the month, for example, in the evening when the sun set on the 5th of the month, the way we do it. And that's why David mentioned the evening first. Now, why did he mention evening, morning, and noon 3 times? Well, because that was the custom of pious Jews in those days to pray 3 times a day. Now, this complain and murmur translation might not be the best translation. That's the New American Standard Bible. David says, I will complain and murmur. The NIV puts it this way, I cry out in distress. Well, that's not really complaining, is it? The KJV says, I cry aloud. So maybe we don't have too much sanction here in allowing saints to complain when they pray to God. If you recall, Job did do it, but Job was also rebuked for that too by God at the end. He wasn't rebuked for sinning to do something that caused all his suffering, but he was rebuked for demanding that he have an audience with God and so forth. So I think we need to just cry out in distress rather than complain and murmur. David confidently asserts that God will hear his voice in verse 17 and verse 18. God will redeem his soul in peace from the battle which is against me, for there are many who strive with me. In Absalom's rebellion, there were a lot of people that went with Absalom. God will hear and answer them, even the one who sits enthroned from of old. Now, the one who sits enthroned from of old is God. Gill paraphrases the expression, the one who is enthroned from of old, who sits enthroned as of old. Gill says that God is the inhabitant of eternity. I love that phrase there. He is the inhabitant of eternity. Now, the next phrase is a little confusing, at least in the NASB, with whom there is no change. That sounds like that's God who is sitting in eternity, enthroned from of old. But it's not referring to God who does not change. It's referring to the evil opponents of David who do not change. These are the ones who are referred to at the end of verse 19 as those who do not fear God. As Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, prosperity hardens evil people so they don't change. They're happy, they're making money, they have power, they have prestige. Why should I change? Psalm 73 verse 5 speaks of such people. This is a psalm of Asaph. Asaph says this, they are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like mankind. These people who are sitting fat and happy, as Asaph says, the wicked. I envied the arrogant. I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have an easy time until they die, and their bodies are well fed. Well, why should somebody like that change? Of course, when they're about to die, they should change. They'll probably realize it when they start seeing the flickering fires of hell, they might think about changing, but of course then it might be a little bit too late. We go now to Psalms 55, verses 20 and 21. David continues, my friend acts violently against those at peace with him. He violates his covenant. That means his covenant with David. His buttery words are smooth, but war is in his heart. His words are softer than oil, but they are drawn swords. Now who is this friend? As I've said before, it's probably the false companion mentioned in verse 13, who I have speculated quite reasonably to be Ahithophel, David's former advisor, who defected over to Absalom's camp. My friend acts violently against those at peace with him. Well, he gave Absalom advice which would have caused Absalom to come at David violently with Absalom's army. He violates his covenant with David, to be his trusted advisor. Verse 21, Ahithophel's buttery words are smooth. I love that word, buttery. His words were smoother than oil. Smooth means that Ahithophel's treachery was aggravated by hypocrisy. I love you, David. I'll be your advisor. I'm loyal with you to the day you die. His buttery words are smooth, David says, but war is in his heart. Probably referring to the civil war between Absalom and David. David continues, his words, Ahithophel's words, are softer than oil, but they are drawn swords. Their sound is soft, buttery, and sweet. but their effect is as tempered steel as they stab me in the breast, basically is what David is saying. We go now to Psalm 55, verses 22 through 23, and we will be finished with this audio. David continues, but he doesn't continue praying to God. He says, cast your burden upon the Lord. He's either talking to himself or he's talking to an unknown third person hearing the psalm. Cast your burden upon the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken, but you, O God, will bring them down to the pit of destruction. Men of bloodshed and deceit will not live out half their days, but I will trust in you. Now, when David says in verse 22, cast your burden upon the Lord, that should remind us all of the famous passage in 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And God really does care for his people. And that's why you will find Christians everywhere, even those going through horrible sufferings, who will not let go of God because they know that God cares for them. Cast your burden upon the Lord and he will sustain you, David says. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken. And that reminds me of the famous verse in Hebrews 13:5, where God says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Don't put your trust in money, the author of Hebrews says, because I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. And David says, God will never allow the righteous to be shaken. Jesus said, you build your house upon a stone. When the floods come, the house is going to stay. Everybody else is going to go, but you're going to stay. Verse 23, but you, O God, David continues, will bring, he's turned his attention now away from the third person audience or himself, cast your burden upon the Lord, he says to somebody. Of course, he's not saying that to God, but now in verse 23, he turns back to God. He says, but you, O God, will bring them, that's his enemies, down to the pit of destruction. Men of bloodshed and deceit will not live out half their days. I mentioned that earlier when David, earlier in the psalm, says that the unrighteous will be taken alive to Sheol. Probably means prematurely. They won't live out half their days. And generally, that's true. People who live evil lives generally get snuffed out. Watch the movies. Who gets snuffed out? The bad guys, usually. Their henchmen, the bodyguards, bang, 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 they're dead. Happens all the time. Not all the time. I mean, sometimes evil people live a long time, but in general, that's true. But David says, in a positive note, at the very end of his psalm, Psalms 55, verse 23, David says, but I will trust in you. And once again, as I've said over and over again, David finishes his psalm on an uplifting note. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished Psalms chapter 55. We're now ready to go in our next audio to Psalm 56, which I will entitle, In God I Trust. Sounds like how America used to be when they had on their coins, In God We Trust. But we're going to call this psalm, In God I Trust. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.